Morning, everybody. I think we should just start. Normally, these talks get introduced by one of the coordinators, and we had a brief discussion with Sui, who should introduce me, and I'm going to introduce myself. Welcome, everybody. So in yesterday's colloquium, Sui very nicely reviewed the whole scope of this program, and the scope ranges from really down-to-earth computation of QSD cross-sections to n equals 4 and n equals 8 theories and towards perhaps a perturbative theory of gravity. And now I'm going to stay at this QCD down-to-earth end and going to review to you the states of QSD calculations and what they have to do with modern advances in the computations of scattering amplitudes, and of course much more really, where do we stand as far as QCD at colliders is concerned. Now QCD at colliders is basically present everywhere. It's clearly established as theory of strong interactions, and if we do high energy collisions of protons, we have QCD everywhere. Namely, starting with an initial state where we have parton distributions, in the final state we can have jets, which are also QCD phenomena. We do have hard scattering matrix elements in the middle, which mediate our reaction, and these can be dressed with either higher order corrections or multiple radiation. So having QCD everywhere in such a reaction, it's clear that understanding QCD is mandatory for doing anything meaningful with what you observe at colliders, namely for the interpretation of collider data for precision studies, likewise as for searches for new physics. Now, QCD is a fairly broad subject, and it gets hard really to structure everything. I will start off with jets and event shapes, which are sort of the cleanest signatures of QCD, and actually there have been quite a number of advances on this field in recent years. And then doing multiparticle production at next to leading order with impacts for searches, precision observables at next to leading order, and then also parton distributions, infrared structure and resummation, and finally multi-loop results. And in all these objects you will see that scattering amplitudes are central, and understanding of scattering amplitudes is central in order to make something meaningful out of this. Now, jets and event shapes. Jets are finite state signatures of quark and gluon production, and they are defined through a jet algorithm which should possess certain criteria. First and foremost, infrared safety, namely that jets should be insensitive to collinear and soft radiation, and this criterion gave rise to cone algorithms as well as recombination algorithms. Both have their advantages and disadvantages, because if you think about jets, then cone algorithms are perhaps a more intuitive picture. However, if you go into the fine-grained details of them, then they become pretty involved, since you have to say what you do when you split and merge neighboring objects. Recombination algorithms are less geometrically intuitive. However, infrared safety is easier to implement, and actually you can make a perfect cone by a recombination algorithm, which is nowadays known as the anti-KT algorithm. Now, all these things run on multiparticles in a finite state, and the larger the number of particles gets, the more possibilities you have to recombine them. And actually, one great advance in the subject was a very fast implementation of a whole class of jet algorithms now available in the FastJet package. Now,
for this anti-KT.
Yes.
Are you saying you're defining cones by angles rather than?
No, the anti-KT algorithm is a sequential recombination algorithm. It only turns out that if you apply it, that the final result of this jet clustering gives you perfectly cone-shaped jets. So it is a sequential, it is not a cone algorithm, so it's not something where you take sort of a cone of a fixed size, you scan over your final state and try to maximize the energy inside a cone. But what this anti-KT algorithm is a sequential recombination algorithm, so at any given time you only look at a pair of two objects and you pick the next pair to recombine, then you start the procedure over and over again. So there at each single step you can very easily check infrared safety. However, the way the weight function, so the function which picks the next pair to be recombined, the way the weight function is designed is such that in the end you get perfectly cone-shaped jets. Okay, so what are you then doing with these jets? Jets are actually a very powerful analysis tool, and two recent advances in there are the notion of jet catchment area, where here, actually, I got the picture on your question. So this is a clustering which comes out from the anti-KT algorithm. The jet catchment area, you define this by filling your detector up with pseudoparticles of basically vanishing energy and looking where these pseudoparticles end up in which jet. And here you see then that in this anti-KT algorithm, the jet catchment area, so the area in the detector from which jets, from which particles are clustered into jets, is perfectly spherical, so you have perfect cone jets. Much more important for searches is the notion of jet substructure. And jet substructure starts from the aim of reconstructing boosted massive particles decaying into jets. And boost massive particles decaying into jets. So, for example, what you're looking for is Higgs boson production in association with a W boson, where the Higgs is actually recoiling at substantial transverse momentum against the W. And there, what you're trying to do then is to reconstruct this boosted object. And the trick is that you try to trigger on this object by first clustering all the decay products into one large, very fat jet, and then sequentially lowering the resolution parameter, making the jet narrower and narrower. And if it is just a QCD jet, if it's just background, then typically as you lower your resolution parameter, everything will be nice and continuous. The mass contained inside the jet will just go down smoothly. However, if it's an object which underwent a two-particle decay, you will see a sharp discontinuity as soon as you start resolving the two nearly massless decay products. So for a Higgs boson, you would then see a relatively sharp edge in the invariant jet mass as a function of jet resolution. And with this, you can then nicely construct triggering algorithms for heavy particles. And one of the very first applications was actually the resurrection of the TT by Higgs final states as a possibility to search for the Higgs boson. I mean, for a long time, conventional wisdom held that this reaction is simply overwhelmed by the background and cannot be observed reliably at the LHC. Now, using this jet substructure techniques, then the observation of this reaction again looks feasible. Okay.
In Monte Carlo.
In Monte Carlo. In Monte Carlo. Now, people
shown by the experimenters.
Now, people have been. People have been playing around, for instance, with in trying to reconstruct hadronically decaying Ws, which recoil at large transverse momentum, which recoil against the jet. People have tried this at the Tevatron, and first results really, really look promising. And then again, with the resolution of the LHC detectors, we have a much better tracking, where we have much better jet resolution. These things are actually going to look pretty feasible. Okay. Oh, that was the wrong way around. Event shapes are closely related to jets, and they characterize geometrical properties of hadronic final states. And again, they are very important as search tools if you don't know what you're looking for. So if you are just looking for anomalies for partly invisibly decaying objects, then these geometrical properties of hadronic final states can become very, very important. They have been studied extensively at LEP, where, of course, they were used in standard model studies like measurements of alpha S, resummation, and power corrections. Now, people have now gone through the effort of classifying event shapes at Hadron colliders, and there things get slightly more difficult, because while in E plus E minus you basically get the full event information at your disposal, here you only can rely on transverse quantities. But then, even if you only rely on transverse quantities, you can account for the finite coverage, and you can then classify your variables. Actually, build tools for model-independent searches. Now, these event shape variables, we will see them throughout the talk a few more times. They are now really one of the tools which LHC is going to use pretty intensively. Okay, now turning to multiparticle production at next to leading order, which was clearly one of the major fields of activity during the last few years. And as we mentioned yesterday, a lot of progress has been made, especially on this subject, since the KITP program in 2004. And we are going to see now what the outcome of this progress is. Now, while looking into multiparticle production, multiparticle final states are very, very frequent at colliders because they are, for instance, decay signatures of short-lived massive particles like top quarks. They are both signal and background for new particle searches. Whenever you look at new heavy particles, then you're looking into these high multiplicity final states, and for those we want to have reliable predictions. So reliable predictions, you identify this with getting next to leading order predictions. Why does one want to go to next to leading order? I mean, you have all these tools like Herwig, like Sherpa, where you say, okay, they can simulate all these multiparticle final states. However, these simulations are actually quite uncertain. Typically, what is done and what you see when you look into experimental papers, then they actually compare with tools like Herwig or Pythia, but what experimentalists then do is to take these predictions for the shapes and to leave the normalization of the theory prediction actually as a free parameter. And this works well if you more or less know what there is in your data. Now, if you want to use your data to actually constrain either parameters of the standard model or to constrain new physics effects, then taking the normalization of your theory prediction as a free parameter may not be the best choice. And in order to get a reliable normalization as well as a reliable error estimate, you want next to leading order corrections. Also, at next to leading, that's the first perturbative order where you get sensitive on difference in your JET algorithm. We have seen these cone and sequential clustering algorithms, and they definitely do behave differently, and where you also get sensitive on effects of extra radiation. So there is a clear case for doing next to leading order. Now, how do next to leading order calculations look like? In a nutshell, next to leading order calculations here for proton-proton going to three jets, so a fairly simply pure QST process. They possess two different ingredients, namely on the one hand vertical corrections, which come as one-loop matrix elements, and in these one-loop matrix elements you have explicit infrared poles from the loop integral. So you do the loop integration and you see that this loop integral gives rise to divergences both in the ultraviolet and in the infrared regime. Ultraviolet poles are removed by renormalization. You're left with the infrared poles. And these vertical corrections, they are known, and that's standard technology of the 70s and 80s for all 2-to-2 processes. Over the past decade, many 2-to-3 processes have became known one by one, basically each of them being a major effort to calculate on its own. And the current frontier are 2-to-4 processes, which pose a major challenge on the one hand from the complexity, as we outlined yesterday, and also from the point of view that there are many, many 2-to-4 processes which you actually would like to know to next to leading order. And if you spend years and years on a single process, this is not going to get you anywhere. The second contribution are tree-level matrix elements with one extra parton. Here we have three jets, so next to leading order contribution is four partons. And this means that one of these partons is actually unconstrained and can become soft or collinear. And that's actually a good feature because this also gives rise to infrared poles, which cancel the infrared poles in from the verticals. And to combine vertical corrections and real emission, what you need is to find these infrared poles from the real radiation, where they don't show up really in such a nice way as here from the loop integral, but where they come after complicated interplay between the JET algorithm or observable definition with these matrix elements, and what you want to have there is actually a process independent method which picks up these poles and allows you to combine them with the virtual corrections. And there are various different methods on the market which basically you can industrialize these days. Okay, the big challenge here are with the multi-leg one-loop amplitudes. However, as we've seen yesterday, basically we can consider this challenge to be solved. However, the challenges here are the complexity and the stability. Complexity, you have a large number of diagrams, you have a large number of scales, and stability means that if you have such big expressions, then actually you can easily run into numerical instability problems. Now, what helps you here is the general structure. The general structure is of any such loop amplitude in four dimensions or near four dimensions is that you only have a finite number of loop integrals, a finite number of loop functions which can appear, which are boxes, triangles, bubbles, tadpoles, plus a rational remainder. And in order to compute a loop amplitude, nowadays one would not go along, write down all the Feynman diagrams and try to do all the loop integrals one by one. But as explained yesterday, what you're in fact after is these coefficients here. I mean, it's a finite number of coefficients which you need to determine for a given process. And there has been enormous recent progress in order to determine these coefficients in a very nice and systematic way, either by extending classical methods like tensor reduction and form factor decomposition, or going the much more modern way by using unitarity and multiparticle cuts to fix these coefficients. And of course, unitarity and multiparticle cuts, this then makes much more use of the gauge theory structure of your underlying theory and actually leads to much, much smaller expressions. Now you can do this reduction at the integral or at the integrand level, and you can perform it in four or in d dimensions. Either way has its advantages and its shortcomings, and all these methods have been actually put to usage in actual calculations. Now the big issue, given the large number of pros which you're potentially interested in, is the automation of next to leading order calculations. Now for the real radiation, we have systematic methods, and actually from its structure, the real radiation contributions are very similar to leading order calculations. So you can take your leading order event generators and build add-ons to these leading order event generators, allowing you to do real radiation corrections with them. The bigger issue are the virtual corrections. And now for the virtual corrections, again, determining these integral coefficients, there have been implementations of several different methods. And most notably in recent times where big progress has been made is, on the one hand, using the unitarity and multiparticle cuts by the Black Hat collaboration, which have implemented this method, including a procedure to determine rational terms, into an actual program and have applied this, as we will see on the next few slides. And the other place where a lot of progress has been made is on the reduction at the integrand level with the cut tools package. So this OPP reduction at the integrand level has also been implemented in a process independent way. And of course, then if you have the real corrections here, if you have the vertical corrections here, next step is to combine the two. And just last week, the first combination of these packages, namely of cut tools for the vertical corrections and MET-FKS for the real radiation, into a single automated NLO package named MATLOOP became available. This is based on the MATGraph event generator and is basically ultimately going to get you next to leading order corrections with the same comfort and ease as MATGraph nowadays gives you leading order corrections. Now, of course, this package still has a few limitations. It's the first ever implementation of this type, and we are very much looking forward to future publicly available implementations. Black Hat, they have teamed up with Sherpa in order to complement them with the real radiation corrections, and in this framework they also then get calculational results. Now, multi-leg processes, as mentioned before, 2 to 3 are still possible to be done by hand, and there's a huge spectrum of Riest results on 2 to 3, but this is not really where the frontier is. Frontier is currently in the 2 to 4 processes, and during the past year, there's a large number of 2 to 4 calculations that became available, and one of the first ones here was TT-bar, BB-bar production. Now, this is, of course, an important background to the Higgs search in TT-bar, BB-bar final states, and this is the first example of a 2 to 4 reaction including masses, and it has been performed in timely coincidence by two competing groups, namely, on the one hand, by extending sort of the more classical methods of tensor reduction in a numerical way, and on the other hand by using more modern techniques from the CUT tools package. And one thing which is very important can be seen on this figure here, which is the invariant mass distribution of the BB-bar pairs in TT-bar, BB-bar final states. And what you see here, the line, the one line is the leading order prediction, the blue band is the uncertainty on the leading order prediction, and the red curve here is the next to leading order, correct, is the next to leading order cross section. And what you see here is actually that around 100 GeV, you do see a peak in the next to leading order cross-section, next to leading order normalized to leading order. So actually what you see here is that the shape gets modified, and that the shape gets modified not in a monotonous way, but actually that you start generating peak structures just because of the interplay of the extra radiation with the event selection cuts. So this is something very important to be kept in mind. I mean, when you look for new physics, if you search for new physics, then typically you look for peaks, and suddenly here you see a peak appearing just because of an interplay of event selection and extra radiation. This peak first appears at next to leading order. So this is a very, very clear motivation that it was worth doing this calculation in order to better understand these kinematical features in the distributions and not to be fooled by actually seeing such peaks then in data. Now, this has then, of course, important implications for Higgs studies. This was further extended to TT-bar plus 2 jets, and then, finally, to settle many of the questions like what mass, what top mass we are actually measuring at the Tevatron, the PP-bar going to TT-bar cross-section, so just inclusive top production, including the top quark decays, was also computed most recently, and there the good news is that actually the non-factorizing corrections, which so far were unknown and always neglected, therefore, that they turn out to be small, and that the physics studies on TT-bar pairs done so far were actually based on fairly reliable theoretical descriptions. Now, moving on to further 2 to 4 and 2 to 5 reactions. In this case here, there have been various calculations. There have been two calculations on W plus 3 jet, one relying on the Black Hat and Sherpa package, the other on Rocket, which is an implementation of d-dimensional unitarity. And what was observed was that one gets an excellent description of Tevatron data. You have moderate corrections, you have a precise prediction, so an error band, residual error band, and next to leading order at the 10% level, and you can actually play a very rich phenomenology in the sense of scale setting and in the sense of studying final state correlations between leptons and jets. So the vector boson plus 3 jet already had a lot of phenomenology in stock. W plus 4 jets is a background to top quark production and has been recently accomplished by Leckert and Sherpa, and there again it's a rich spectrum of phenomenology coming out. And just to very briefly look into what type of phenomenology one can do, let's look here at studies based on the W plus 3 jets, and there one issue is, of course, what is the appropriate scale for such multi-leg processes. So what are actually the hard scales, the typical virtualities, which we are probing. And conventional wisdom at the Tevatron was always that the scale corresponding to the transverse energy of the W boson is the typical scale, since the W boson is the hardest object in the process, and the Tevatron energies, this was to a good approximation, also true. However, if you then look at the perturbative convergence, especially at much higher jet energies, so at energies where the jets have much higher energies than the W boson itself, then what you see is that in these situations you have a very poor perturbative convergence, which is illustrated here. Namely, what we see here is that we have a leading order prediction which is far, far away from the next leading order prediction. And this is because the transverse energy of the W in these kinematical situations does not capture the hard process, because the W is actually one of the softer particles. And the outcome from this was that the total transverse energy, so the scalar sum of all these transverse energies in the process, this accounts for the full hard final state dynamics, and if you use this as a scale, convergence is much better. And this insight here then allows an optimization of the leading order studies. Okay, final point on next to leading order multi-leg, the vector boson plus three jets. You can also cross the two jets into the final state, cross the vector boson into the initial state, and you have E plus E minus to five jets. And there, that was a sample application of MAT-FKS, so this was really something which was done basically in passing towards the development of the MAT-loop package, and it is the first calculation of this type. And what one sees is that one obtains here a good description of the data, and this possibly leads to new extraction of alpha s. I mean, there the jury, especially on hadronization corrections, is still out, and this clearly has the potential of becoming a new extraction of alpha s really from multi-jet rates at lab. Now, moving away from next to leading order calculations to next to leading order, why would you want to have next to next to leading order? I mean, here we are now talking no longer about searches, about multiparticle production, but we are talking about precision observables, which are reactions that are measured to a few percent accuracy, like E plus E minus 3 jets, deep inelastic jet production at hadron colliders, or vector boson production at hadron colliders. And these processes, they have potentially, and these processes, they are measured very precisely. So this is one place where one really wants to have as many terms as possible in the perturbative series in order to match the experimental accuracy with a similarly small residual uncertainty on your theory prediction. We've seen in the W plus 3 jets, we had a residual next to leading order uncertainty of 10%. Now, if your data are sort of at the 2 or 3% level, this is clearly insufficient, and you want to do better than that. There's another motivation for going to very high orders in the perturbative series, namely for processes which have potentially large perturbative corrections. So processes where people first had only the leading order, then next to leading order was computed, and the next to leading order turned out to be as large as the leading order, for a variety of reasons, either because of actually lots of possibilities of radiation, so domination by incoming gluonic states, or because of new perturbative channels opening up at the next to leading order. And for these processes, you then actually want to have even higher order corrections. And so in these cases, next to leading order corrections are required for meaningful interpretation of the experimental data and for a precise determination of fundamental parameters. If you go through this whole list here, then in this whole list, They have observables which contribute into PDF fields, observables which are used to determine the top mass, observables which are used to determine the strong coupling constant or the electric parameters. And for all these precise determinations, you actually want to have a theory precision which is competitive with the quality of the experimental data. Now, how does one go ahead? Here again, on an example, sort of in a cartoon, the three principal ingredients to next to leading arc reactions, in this case for proton-proton going to two jets, there you have three different contributions, two loop matrix elements, one loop matrix elements with one extra parton, three level matrix elements with two extra partons. And here the situation is such that, again, even after ultraviolet renormalization, we have leftover infrared poles in these two loop matrix elements. We do have infrared poles in the one loop matrix elements, and since they have one more parton, then we actually require jets in our final state. One of these partons can become collinear or soft, so there's another source of infrared singularities also in this process here. The three-level matrix elements by themselves, they are finite. However, we have two more partons than we actually need, so two of them can become collinear or soft. And it is then that all these three contributions have infrared poles. However, the difficulty starts with the real radiation, with the double real radiation at three level and the single real radiation at one loop, where you actually need to devise a method to extract the infrared poles from those ones. I mean, they here, the soft and collinear singularities, they only show up when you integrate over the phase space, and integration over the phase space means including your jet algorithm, including your definition of the observable. So again, what you want to have, like in the next leading order case, is a method to extract the infrared singularities in a process-independent manner here. And so what are the challenges with this real radiation? You want to be able to extract these singularities for arbitrarily chosen infrared safe final state cuts, and there's basically two approaches to this problem. One approach is a purely numerical approach in the sense that one takes the whole integrand, so the whole integrand means the phase space integral times the matrix element times the definition of the observable, and expands this in the sense of distributions. And once this expansion in distributions is done, then the coefficients in these distributions can actually be determined by numerical integration. And of course, this numerical integration has to be done with some care, and this requires an iterated decomposition of the phase space into small sectors, where in each sector at the end of the procedure you are only picking up a single singularity and all the overlapping singularities are disentangled. The other approach to it follows more closely what was done at next to leading order, namely to find approximations in all unresolved limits followed by analytic integration. And based on these several well-established methods at next to leading order, two methods have now also been put to work at next to leading order, namely on the one hand a QT subtraction, which exploits the specific transverse momentum structure of these reactions for certain low multiplicity observables, and the other is the so-called antenna subtraction method. And there the idea is that all these unresolved configurations, so where up to two partons become unresolved, they are related to configurations where you have basically two hard partons which act as hard radiators and some unresolved radiation in between. And this then means, say, for the real radiation contributions, you have to at most consider four parton configurations, so two hard partons, two unresolved partons in between, in such a much larger process with many more partons involved. You can then actually factor off all these two-parton singularities into simpler functions, and these functions are then process-independent since they depend only on the nature of the particles involved and not on the nature of all the other particles here, and they are to a large extent sufficiently simple to be integrated analytically. Okay, so what are results so far obtained next to leading order? One of the first fully exclusive reactions that was computed at next to leading order was the Higgs boson production in gluon-gluon fusion. Now the Higgs doesn't couple directly through gluons, but only through the loop, which in the standard model is largely just through a top quark loop. You have small standard model contribution from bottom quarks in there, but really largely in the standard model, this would be a top quark loop. In extensions of the standard model, any other beyond the standard model object which is colored would also appear here in this loop. So actually this cross-section by itself would also have a big sensitivity on beyond standard model physics. Now, exclusive corrections at next to leading order, including the Higgs boson decay, have been performed both using sector decomposition and using QT subtraction. And if you have the full final state information, then you can do lots of things with it. If you have all the distributions to next to leading order, then you can basically rebuild the neural network studies which were done at the Tevatron in order to compute the QCD corrections really to the neural network output, and thereby to quantify the uncertainty on this neural network output. And it is these things which then actually go into the uncertainty estimates of the Higgs boson non-observation on the Higgs boson exclusion from the Tevatron. So really, given that you have the full kinematical information, you can then basically compute any observer which is looked in at the Tevatron for Higgs boson searches, and really combine these different channels, these different observables, in the same way as the experiment combines them. And now, at this level of precision, of course, what you also require are not only the QCD corrections, but also mixed QCD and electric corrections. Now, as already mentioned before, in this loop which you have, which couples the gluons to the Higgs boson, you are actually sensitive to new physics effects like squark and Guino loops, extra heavy quark families, or color octet scalars. And what is depicted here is the Higgs boson production cross section in the presence of an additional color octet scalar, and actually in the presence of a pretty heavy color octet scalar. So you're starting here at 300 GeV up to 1 TeV for this color octet scalar as a mass. And what you see here is that still at 400 GeV for this color octet scalar, you have more than twofold increase of the over the standard model cross section. So this could open up a window to new physics, an indirect window to new physics, and of course could help us if we are lucky in searching for the Higgs boson, because typically all these extra effects lead to an increase in the Higgs boson production cross section. What has been looked into as well, so this was Higgs boson production in gluon fusion. What has been looked into as well is Higgs boson production in vector boson fusion. And here already the next to leading order was relatively reliable. Next to leading order makes the situation even better. And we have a very, very small uncertainty. This cross section is now predicted very reliably. And of course, this cross section, on the one hand, it is predicted very reliably from the point of view of QCD corrections. On the other hand, it's also reliable and much more reliable than the gluon fusion production cross section in the sense of pattern distribution functions. We will come to this in a few minutes. Namely, here you are quark initiated, and the quark distributions are very well constrained. So this cross section is actually known to the percent level, and this will of course then play a very, very important role once the Higgs boson is discovered to test the Higgs mechanism, because what you're doing here is actually measuring the Higgs boson coupling the electrification explosions. And this is more than just about finding the explosion, but there's precise standard model statement for this coupling here. And we actually want to see that not only the Higgs boson is there, but that the Higgs mechanism is working the way it's supposed to work by having the right coupling here. So this then clearly justifies that we're aiming here for percent precision. Vector boson production at next to leading order. Now, vector boson production, the inclusive coefficient functions, they have been known for a very long time and were also used in PDF fits and so on. By now, Maurice results include fully exclusive calculations in the form of parton-level event generators, again, using two different methods, including the vector boson decay and allowing for arbitrary finite state cuts. And there, what you're looking into there is precise measurements of parton distributions, for instance, from the lepton charge symmetry, which measures the U to D ratio. And what you see here is that one finds very small next to leading order corrections. Including these corrections makes the theory more reliable and then allows you to determine the quark distributions better than they were determined before. Moving on to jet production. Jet production, so far there are no jet production results to next to leading order at hadron colliders. What has been obtained is in E plus E minus collisions. There are two calculations of E plus E minus three jets. And here this is a classical example for two calculations being really valuable, namely Stefan doing the second calculation actually discovered a fairly subtle error in our implementation relating to large angle soft radiation. And once this was corrected, we got full agreement, but it was really important to have actually two independent calculations. Now again, the way the calculations are done are in the form of parton level event generators, which allow to compute any infrared safe observable, so event shape distributions, moments, and jet rates. And what one sees here, you have a large spectrum of observables which all have been measured. And the NNLO corrections differ substantially between different observables. So what we have here are different moments of the thrust distribution and the heavy jet mass distribution. Now these two distributions at the leading order level completely agree. So the definition of these two, if you only allow for leading order, then they have the same definition. And what we see here is that the perturbative corrections already at next to leading order, and then also even worse at next to leading order, they are rising. So the in the case of the thrust distribution, so thrust is actually not that well behaved in perturbation theory, whereas for the heavy jet mass, they stay nice and flat. Inclusion of these corrections then actually improve the consistency among the different shape measurements. And the next leading order scale uncertainty comes down to a few percent, even down to 1% for the three jet rate. Then one can go back to lab data and actually do a lot of phenomenology. Now, doing a lot of phenomenology requires a bit more than only the next leading order corrections. It also requires resummation in this sense, in this case, because sometimes even next to leading order is not reliable, it's not converging very well, because you have large logarithmic corrections at all orders. However, the good news is that there are already well-established methods to resum these all-order logarithms, and these resummations, they are known to next to leading logarithmic accuracy for all shapes. And for some of the shape distributions, namely for the thrust and the heavy jet mass, precisely the two which we've just seen, you even know two further logarithmic orders. Now, even including these resummation corrections, still you're talking about partons, not about the hadrons measured in experiment. So what you still need to do is hadronization corrections, and this is where we are currently still facing an open end, so where things are not yet settled. One classical procedure which was done throughout lab times was to estimate these corrections just from leading log parton Schauer event generators, and at lab times this was fine. However, one can do better by, for instance, using Meuhnomelon-based models for these hadronization corrections, and that's the so-called dispersive model. And if you do this, then you find something which is quite different from the Leeuwenloch parton shower event generators. Here again, on the moments of the thrust distribution, you have, for each moment, you have two histograms, namely one histogram, which is sort of the lighter colors, the light blue and the light yellow, which are which are obtained using this Renormalon-based model, and then the dark blue and dark orange here, which are obtained using just the leading log Pythia predictions. And you see that actually Renormalon calculus predicts much higher hadronization corrections, consequently also then a different value of alpha S, because it is the combination of the two which you use to describe your data. And if you have less hadronization corrections, then you get out a different value of alpha S. So alpha S has then been extracted from many different jet observers. I won't go through all these in detail, but it's perhaps better to look onto here. And here you see that actually you get different clusters of measurements. First of all, and what you see here is that those measurements which just rely on simple-minded Pythia hadronization corrections typically are sort of a bit more on the higher end, whereas those which rely on dispersive models are on the lower end. What we see here also is that the three-jet rate, now compared to the event shapes, is perhaps offering one of the most reliable determinations. And what we also see here is that we have relatively good consistency of all these measurements with the world average, perhaps leaving aside this measurement here. Now what one has to say is that this is actually the study which has gone through the most effort in determining analytically hadronization corrections, and this tells you that perhaps there are still a number of open questions in stock when doing precision physics in order to account for the parton-hadron transition.
But Thomas,
yes.
What should I conclude from this? I mean, if you say that the large values of alpha S, they have a simplified treatment of hadronization corrections, they're most likely to be discarded if you try to average over certain measurements. Whereas all those determinations which have a more sophisticated treatment of the non-perturbative corrections, if you add next to leading order a substantially lower value than the world average, so there seems to be an issue to revisit actually the world average and the determination of that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we will see in a few slides that if you go to determinations from deep inelastic data, that actually you're also pretty far away from the world average. So therefore, all this issue on precision QCD, on alpha S from precision QCD, is actually an open issue still. What you also see here, perhaps just for a minute still, is that the theory errors on those extractions which have a simplified treatment of hadronization corrections are much larger. So the theory errors are the blue bands here in the errors, are much larger than in the case of these analytic and more sophisticated approaches. And the reason for this is that actually in these cases here, you're matching the hadronization corrections on the perturbative order which you're working at, whereas here there is one value for the hadronization correction, which is what Pythia gives you, and it does not move with the order of perturbation theory. So therefore, also here you have a better matching, a better disentanglement between perturbation theory and the non-perturbative contributions. Very briefly, huge effort is going on towards jet cross sections at hadron colliders. You know the two loop matrix elements. However, there is a lot of work going on to extract subtraction methods, also to include initial state radiation, which you have to handle at hadron colliders. And of course, the big issue is also for the top quark cross section to really get top quark pair production cross section exact to the next to leading order level. And there has been a lot of progress on the matrix elements and likewise on the real radiation contributions. And by combining cleverly residue subtraction and sector decomposition, now real radiation seems to be feasible, the treatment of the real radiation seems to be feasible in the Topogog pair production. Moving on to parton distributions. Now, parton distributions, they are typically determined from a global fit to collider data, huge data sets from very different observables. Parton distributions are determined at leading order, next to leading order, and next to leading order, and they require on the theory side both the Deaglub splitting functions, which determine how parton distributions vary with resolution scale, and for each process which you want to include, you require the Hart coefficient functions, which you know to next to leading order for part of these, and only to next to leading order for the jet production observables. And of course, key issue is also the incorporation of experimental and theoretical errors. There's a number of collaborations which have been performing these fits in part for a very long time. There are a few new groups which have joined these efforts, the NNPDF group and also Sven Moch and his collaborators. And all these parton distribution fits, they differ quite a bit in the selection of the data sets and also in the treatment of the errors. If you compare the fit results, then what you see is that quark distributions are determined precisely at large X, whereas the gluon distribution is uncertain within 10% already at large X, and that you see differences between the fits which are actually larger than the errors quoted by the individual collaborations. There is some consistency within errors. However, one very important thing which Sven already alluded to is that if you leave alpha S also as a fit parameter, and if you do this again at next to leading order levels, so this is a next to leading order extraction of alpha S from a parton distribution fit, you end up with similarly low values of alpha S, which then, in combination with what we've seen for thrust distribution, may actually put the way of getting the world average and the precise value of the world average into question. So this is currently an open issue, and just 2 months ago there has been a workshop in Munich trying to bring together all the people who are working on alpha S, who were working on recent extractions of alpha S, in order to see what to make out of this situation. So very briefly, infrared structure and resummation. So we're leaving now the domain of fixed order, because sometimes fixed order is actually not what you want to look at, because the QSD perturbative expansion in alpha S becomes problematic if we have more than one largely different scale in a process. So for instance, like in this W plus multi-jet production, if you have on the one hand a scale which is the transverse momentum of the jet, and on the other hand the scale which is set by the W mass, and these scales become more and more different, then you can encounter large logarithms of the scale ratios, and this becomes problematic. Likewise, you can also have large logarithms if your phase space for soft radiation is limited, or if you drive your theory to a specific limit like the high energy limit. In all these cases, you want to rearrange the perturbative series by resumming these large logarithmic corrections to all orders. And the simplest example for leading logarithmic resummation are actually all these event generators which you know and love, like Herwig, Pythia, and Sherpa. They are based on leading logarithmic resummation. So they may not even get the leading order QSD prediction right, but they get all the leading logs in all orders of perturbation theory right. And sometimes this is already sufficient, so to get first idea it is very often sufficient, but in many cases they have also been far off from what reality is. Resummation in fixed order, so to combine next to leading order and parton showers, is one of the issues which has now become an industry. There are two approaches on the market, MCAT-NLO and PowHack, and both these approaches have been on the market now for around 5 years, and what's currently happening is that more and more processes are actually added one by one into either framework. Now PowHack, they have now set up really a framework of interfaces, so-called PowHack box, which makes it much more easy to implement new processes as you go along. Now, resummation, especially higher order resummation, is closely interlinked with infrared structure. And infrared structure means infrared poles and loop amplitudes. Now, the infrared poles and loop amplitudes, if you look at real emission, then these infrared poles and loop amplitudes, they closely relate with logarithms in the real emission. I mean, if you send these logarithms to their divergent limit, to the kinematic edge, they will actually generate you the infrared singularities, which cancel the infrared poles and the loop amplitudes. And already 12, 13 years ago, Stefano Cattani was able to predict infrared poles at the two-loop level just from knowing resummation. And this is perhaps one of the papers which really got this whole industry of two-loop calculations, of next to leading order calculations going, that you always had to check. You could take your result, go back to the Cattani formula, and see whether you got the right poles out. Likewise, you can determine large X resummation coefficients from infrared poles of the three-loop form factors. So form factors are very simple objects where you only have two patterns involved, but they already contain a lot of information on infrared structure. Now, the big new player in this subject is soft collinear effective theory, where you actually split your degrees of freedom into soft and hard modes. And in this effective theory, the infrared poles in QCD actually turn into ultraviolet poles in this theory. And now SCED, as a theory, is a renormalizable theory, having multiplicative renormalization. Now, so far there was no formula which could get you infrared poles to all orders. Now, you do understand ultraviolet renormalization. You have a renormalization group for this, and this then allowed people to make a prediction of the pole structure in QCD by using multiplicative renormalization in soft collinear effective theories. And this then can lead to an all-order conjecture on the infrared poles of massless multi-loop and multi-leg amplitudes. Now, SCED can then be used to actually perform resummations, and there are a variety of examples, like the thrust distribution in plus and minus, inclusive Dalian and Higgs production, inclusive photons, and people are working very, very heavily on doing jet production and hadron collider observables, where you actually are sensitive on the radiation of incoming partons into this SCED formalism. Top quark pair production, I mean, again, here you want to have a very, very precise prediction because data are getting more and more precise. Previously, people had known the next to leading order plus next to leading log approximation, and the infrared structure is much more involved. So adding an extra log here actually turned out to be a formidable challenge. And it's only over the past 2 years that people have realized that in this case, in contrast to the light quark case, also multi-particle correlations appear. And so far, one can predict the infrared poles to the two-loop order. Now, putting an extra log here, the dominant contributions, we have known them for quite a while, and the full corrections have been recently obtained from either massive soft anomalous dimensions or using soft collinear effective theory. What one sees here, if one compares the fixed order expansion at next to leading order with the resummed expansion, if one were to put the two curves on top of each other, they would not differ very much. But what you see is that the error bands shrink considerably if you include the resummation. So again, this enhances the reliability. The last word on multi-loop results, where we are again into amplitudes. So there are a few cases where one actually wants to go even beyond next to leading order. If you want to analyze very precisely measured quantities, like sum rules, where you have processes where you do see a convergence of the perturbative series, but where this convergence is pretty small, or when you want to understand the infrared structure of QCD at very high orders in order to extract your resummation coefficients. And now, if you look, sort of looking back to this whole talk here, we've seen various frontiers of complexity. At the one loop, the frontier of complexity is really now doing generic 2 to n processes. And so far we have seen various 2 to 4 processes, 1, 2 to 5 processes. 2 loops, we have the limit of 2 to 2 sketching processes, where we're actually limited by the several different scales in the loop integrals. At 3 loops, we're down to 1 to 2, so this is vertex functions, form factors, and here the limit is that you have many new and very complicated integrals which you have to compute. At 4 loops, we are basically down to 2-point functions, again limited by the complexity of the integrals. There's a variety of techniques to compute these integrals, so we see actually bottleneck are here the loop integrals. There's techniques like the reduction to master integrals, that you take the many, many different integrals here, find linear relations between them, and get down to a small set of integrals. Still, you have to compute those. And ways to compute those is, for instance, by Mellin-Barnes integration, by differential equations, or sector decomposition, which we have seen already on the previous slides. Now, the reduction to master integrals, this is a computer algebra problem, which actually can be automized, and by now there are several different publicly available packages, so you can just download them and do your multi-loop calculations. Computing the integrals themselves is a lot more difficult, and what has been achieved in recent times are the integrals for the 3-loop form factors. So this is 3-loop 3-point functions, 1 off-shell, 2 on-shell legs, and these were largely determined using the Mellin-Barnes integration method, so you really carry out these integrals here. More innovative method is the glue and cut method, where you actually exploit relations between different topologies, and most recently for loop massless propagator integrals were obtained, which we will see in a minute gave rise to the calculation of the for loop R ratio. Okay, 3-loop vertex form factors, they are the simplest infrared divergent QSD objects, and they play a very important role in resummation coefficients and enter also benchmark reactions, and in soft collinear effective theory they actually give you the boundary conditions, so-called hard functions, which are important for many sketch resummations, and most recently they were computed to the 3-loop level. Also at 3-loop, the static quark potential, which is very important for heavy quark mass determinations from sum rules, and also for the description of top quark pair production near the threshold. And this has been computed most recently also to the 3-loop level, and what one sees here by comparing the 3-loop formula to lattice estimations is that at the 3-loop level, unless you go out to very large separations, we now have a very reliable description, perturbatively reliable description of the static quark potential, and this then can in turn be used to determine the strong coupling constant either from the lattice or from quarkonium spectra. This is clearly one of the next points where progress could be made on the determination of alpha s. Last point and last slide here, for loop results, there's not that many, so far what has been computed for loop are the hadronic R ratio, the tau and the tau decay rate, as well as the polarized Bjorkian sum rule. Now, the polarized Bjorkian sum rule may not be that interesting for phenomenology, it was however an important check of the technologies, because this can then be used in the in the Kruter relation in order to check the self-consistency of all these results here. What you see here from the hadronic R ratio and the tau decay rate, you can use these results as precision determinations of alpha s. Now they are largely free from hadronization corrections, and here you get precise measurements of alpha s, which are sitting more towards the high end, more near to the world average. So clearly what we see here is that if you compare this with the previous determinations from thrust and deep inelastic scattering, then there is a tension on the alpha s here. Okay, so let me conclude. I hope I could convince you with this tour de force through recent QSD results that QSD is crucial for successful LHC physics. On the one hand, you need the pattern distributions to know your initial state. You need jets and event shapes as both observables and analysis tools, and you want to understand signals and backgrounds. QSD is clearly getting ready for future challenges with improved jet algorithms and event shape definitions. There's been enormous progress on NLO multi-leg calculations. This is now becoming automatized and industrialized. There are first NLO results for precision observables, which hopefully will at some point then turn into a fully coherent picture of NLO pattern distributions, which then would not only include deep inelastic scattering, but also jet observables at this level of precision. And there has been huge progress in the understanding of the all-order infrared structure, largely through due to inspiration coming from soft collinear effective theories. Thank you very much. Questions? No questions? You're just overloaded.
I have an announcement. So it's 2 p.m. at Fermilab. There's going to be an announcement of some discovery. Anyway, it'll be streamed from, it's the Fermilab Wine and Cheese.
Mm-hmm. The W plus 2 gem.
It's the W plus, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is. I wasn't paying attention, but anyway, it's important, I know that. So we're going to try to set something up. I'm going to have to talk to the people. Maybe we can just project it and watch the show and see what.
If everybody tries to watch this on their computer, then nobody will get anything because the connection will break down.
Yeah. But anyway, it'd be much better if we could put it on the screen. And we should find out what the heck this is about and if it's real.
Well, I mean, there was this paper this morning on the
Yeah, I could look at it. That was a little bit busy. But yeah, okay, yeah. Why don't you tell what it was?
So this morning, yesterday evening, there was a paper by CDF on the W plus 2 jet cross section. Now, W plus 2 jet is the signature also for gauge boson pair production, so for WW and WZ production. And it was used in the measurement of the W pair and WZ cross sections. Now they have been sort of widening their search window, playing around with thresholds and so on. And what you see is actually that you don't see just one peak, which is the combined W and Z peak. I mean, master resolution is not good enough to distinguish WZ from WW production, but you do see a second peak in this invariant mass distribution. So there's one peak, say at 83, which is a weighted average of the W and Z contribution, and another peak at around 150, which is significant at the 3.2 sigma level. And they even quote a cross-section for it. I mean, before you start jumping up and down saying we found the Higgs, in order to identify this with the Higgs, you have to enhance the Higgs cross-section, I think, by a factor of 300 or so.
Oh, so they've
seen supersymmetry. No, they quote cross-section for W plus resonance production of 4 point something picobands. Whereas the Higgs cross-section is at the 10 femtobarn level in this mass range. Okay. So it's going to be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll watch the show. Okay. But anyway, just watch your email for the announcement of where we're going to have
it. It's 2 p.m. our time.
2 p.m. our time, so it's 4 p.m. Fermilab time.
Okay.